a lot of times people will complete therapy, but they need still some level of support. We'd like to start doing some groups in our office just to offer some kind of sense of community.
For us, retention looks a little bit different because it's more focused on they had a good experience and now they'll refer other people to us.
Hello, I'm Steve Klass with the business breakthrough you've been waiting for. We're here taking service businesses to $1 million and beyond. Let's see what kind of impact the next 30 minutes will have on your life and your business. Welcome back to another episode of Service Business Success with me, Steve Klass. Thanks for tuning into another episode, guys. Your continued support is always amazing and encouraging. Sometimes it feels like I'm speaking into the void, but I just got a nice message just the other day saying that they're enjoying the content. So that's always a nice little bump in confidence, believe me. Today, I'm actually speaking to a therapist. I do need help. I always need help because I'm nuts. But this therapist, we're going to dive more into her, the behind the scenes of business and what it looks like running 7 other therapists, managing two other offices, expansion plans, and what it's like kind of running a brick and mortar shop and retaining quality. Also, naturally, we get into a little bit of the therapy side. That's a little bit later in the episode, so please stick around for that. We speak about mindfulness and how to maintain that, being a business owner, how to stay ever present, regardless of whatever external situations that are happening around you. And my guest today, her name is Stephanie Strouth. She's the owner of Anchoring Hope Counseling, and this is her jam. So as you can imagine, we go pretty deep in this episode and thought process and systems and how to kind of get out of your own way as an entrepreneur. So stick around. As always, I would love if you guys could give me some 5 stars out there in the podcast land. Give me a thumbs up on YouTube. The algorithms, that's how they kind of kick in so other people can learn about this podcast. So if you find value in this, I would really appreciate it if you guys just quickly take 2 seconds of your day just to do that for me. And without further ado, let's get into the show with Anchoring Hope Counseling and Stephanie. Welcome back to another episode of Service Business Success with your host, Steve Klass. I am joined by someone, and this is going to be a running theme probably for the next couple of guests. I met on the reality TV show, The Blocks. If this is your first time tuning in, The Blocks, just think of it as Shark Tank meets The Apprentice. It's a reality TV show focused on entrepreneurship, being a better business owner. And I had the fortune to meet Stephanie Strouth, owner of Anchoring Hope Counseling. And I am proud to say that she beat me twice in competitions and got on stage. Now, I won my own pod, but she wasn't part of it. That's probably the reason I won that one day. But I was blown away by her communication skills, her level-headedness, her ability to effectively communicate. And then I learned, of course, what she did, and it made sense that she's a therapist. I'm like, well, of course, this is the best business you can possibly be in because you put people at ease instantly, which is an amazing skill set. So please welcome Stephanie. Thank you so much for coming on the show, by the way. This is delightful.
I'm so happy to be here. I'm like psyched.
Yeah, this is cool. This is cool. So I'd love to learn a little bit more about your journey, especially in the entrepreneurship side. So obviously, you're a licensed therapist. You did, you got your higher education degree. Did you always want to own your own business, or did you want at the time was like kind of like, hey, I just want to be a therapist and I'll figure it out as I go? Like, I'm curious to learn a little bit more about.
Oh gosh, I could talk forever about that. How the everything that just played in. I actually started out in accounting.
Oh, okay.
My bachelor's is in accounting. So about the third year, my teacher goes, accounting is more language than it is math. And I'm like, oh no, I'm not good at language. And then I'm like, I think therapy would be a better option. I don't know. That's language. But it really clicked because I had a passion and I really wanted to work with adult survivors of child abuse. And that was the population that I had a heart for. So I ended up getting my master's in professional counseling and worked at an agency where I got to pilot a program for adult survivors of child abuse.
Oh, wow.
That really helped prepare me for my own private practice as far as marketing and getting the word out and that kind of stuff. From there, I worked for them for a few years. I worked for another private practice for a few years and
Then 2020 hit.
COVID, good old COVID, yeah. Right?
And I told everyone on the blocks, they're like, why? I was bored. You're just sitting there, and I just started a company. So also through that process, I realized that my passion was working with this group of people, but I saw more and more people in the mental health field dealing with burnout and compassion fatigue. And a lot of settings aren't really geared toward a therapist doing this a really long time without getting burnout. So that was a major focus for my company, is creating something that employees want to be a part of and stay at more long term and reduce that burnout.
Very cool. So this was almost on a whim. We're like, I'm going to create this LLC and see what happens. Were you still working for the other agency? Or
yeah.
Because of COVID, it was kind of, you were doing virtual meetings,
right,
at this point?
Yeah, doing a lot of virtual, but it was very limited because what I had been doing was working in home people's homes. We weren't doing that there for a while. So I just put together a little rinky-dink website and did my little LLC formation and started renting an office in the very back of a real estate agency, actually.
Makes sense. Realtors are a little nuts, so they could always pop in, I suppose.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. And by the way, this little rinky-dink website is no longer a rinky-dink website. I was just on it. It has been very much professionalized. So great job.
Everything
on that.
Everything I learned on the blocks, right?
There you go. You implemented it immediately, which is amazing. So I know a lot of people, when they think of therapists, maybe being an entrepreneur or a business owner isn't the first thing that comes to mind. They think of, you know, like oh, you book appointments and guests, people just show up and just kind of spill their heart out. How speak to me how you first got your first clients. Was it word of mouth? Did you have a marketing strategy? And if so, what was that marketing plan?
If we look at that, like starting out on my own, I honestly couldn't tell you. I don't remember how I got my very first client. What I do know is people knew I was a therapist. This is probably a good connection there. People knew I was a therapist, and it's like, hey, are you accepting clients? Okay, well, yeah, now I am.
Sure.
I have this little office, and we can do this. So I just started seeing people. And in our world, there's basically two routes you can go, self-pay and insurance-based. So at that point, I'm just like, doing my MVP. I'm just doing, you know, minimally viable product. Is that what's that?
So, there yeah. you go. Yeah. That's great. You broke down for the listeners. So it's basically like an idea that you have as a business owner, and how are you going to implement it? That's the easiest nutshell way I can
yes.
explain it.
Good job. But I did that, and I just did self-pay. It's much simpler than accepting insurance. So that's just how I started. I didn't really have a plan. It seems like I put my website together. I started putting the information out, and like opportunities found me. It was really wild.
Amazing. What would you say was an overnight success, where like your calendar started getting, you know, booked frequently, or was there a runway where it took like a year or two to gain some traction?
I would say starting out, I was just doing self-pay, and I think it'd probably still be just me if I'd stuck with that. But a company reached out to me that essentially does billing, and it's a really nice setup to accept insurance. So the second I started doing that, it just started flooding, and I was like, I need help. And then it grew like,
literally, as a therapist, you
yeah,
need help.
Yeah. I need all kinds of help. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like after 6 months, I ended up hiring somebody and grew from there.
So I would love to, if you don't mind, peek behind the curtain on the business side. So if you're starting to hire other therapists under you, what does it typically look like on payment structures? Because you're the one, you know, who has the website, paying the marketing fees, advertising dollars. Really, your branding is the one out there. For my own curiosity, do other therapists get paid like a portion of whatever time slot they're booked? Are they salary-based? And think of it as general advice too for anyone who's in the service sector, not necessarily just therapists. What have you found to be the most effective payment structure for your teammates for retention?
This can get complicated because around the same time I was forming, Virginia and maybe even federally, I'm not sure, started tightening up their requirements on who can be contractors versus who can be employees.
Sub versus employees.
Right.
Gotcha.
So it's going to look really different whether someone's a contractor or an employee. We start out as contractors. And with that, I'll just say like industry standards are either like a 60-40 split or a 70-30 split. And it depends on like what the practice is providing in addition and like location and that kind of thing. So, or like sometimes if people are pre-licensed, it'll look more like 50-50 because they need supervision kind of thing.
No, it's a good model. That's a realtors have a very similar commission split. So it's usually 60-40, like the broker will get 40, 60% goes to the agent typically. Unless you're newer starting out, then it could be the 50-50 side because they have the office, they have all the supplies. And, you know, I think that's a really great way to structure really any business that's service-based because it helps your overhead costs. Rather than saying, hey, I'm going to give you a salary of X and you get paid no matter what, you get paid for the actual appointments you're taking, which is a really great way to organically scale without having the stress of making payroll.
Mm-hmm.
I can attest.
Yeah, for sure. And I think like moving over to the employee side of it, I mean, I hired someone who does HR. I've got a healthcare lawyer and a lot of people to help me structure, like building the right team so that I can do that legally. And each state's going to be different. So we're in Virginia and we're able to figure out like what those rules are and how we can navigate it. So it got really complicated, but for today's sake, I won't go into all that.
No, that sounds really complicated.
So. I just say get a good team, get people who understand the nuances.
Yeah, for sure. Now, so this has always been a question of mine when it comes to medical practices, especially therapists. You obviously want your clients to get better, right? And we were in business school or really just a broad education. You want clients you want some retention and repeat business. But as a therapist, it can be a double-edged sword. I'm like, well, I want you to get better so you don't have to see me. What have you found? Like, what's the balance there where it's like, that you can kind of guide clients through where you don't feel like, oh, I want to keep you here for 10 years. Like it comes across as, you know, potentially greedy or just kind of kicking the can. I'm curious about your perspective on
that. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I am like, what we want to do is we want to give people the skills so that they can go out there and thrive on their own. And I thought about this a lot in the blocks because they were talking a lot about retention. And I'm like, how do I apply this? Because I don't want people to be, you know, feel like they're tied to me or I don't want to even like, I don't want to manipulate anybody to be stuck with me longer. Like, how do we do that and maintain our ethics? So the way that I figured about doing that is that a lot of times people will complete therapy, but they need still some level of support. So trying to figure out what that would look like is like, okay, this is great. You've graduated. So what can we start implementing? And I'm still trying to think of ideas to keep you engaged if you want to be engaged. So I know there was an app that we talked about while we were there that might be able, people could continue using once they're done with therapy. We'd like to start doing some groups in our office, more like just come in, hang out. We can talk about mental health, whatever, just to offer some kind of sense of community. So I think for us, retention looks a little bit different because it's more focused on they had a good experience and now they'll refer other people to us. And it's just the highest honor for someone to call in and say, yeah, so-and-so told me about you guys. And we're like, we can neither confirm nor deny whether that person is a client or if we know them, but you know, we always appreciate.
Right. And that's a great way to like say, hey, you really did a great job for Stephanie and changed her life. And again, you can't confirm or deny it, but you can also say, man, that's a good feeling just to hear that it's working. And I think that's your repeat business is getting new clients, just getting through that organic referral base. And out of curiosity, what would you say your client avatar is? Because you started with childhood trauma. Are you focusing now more on women's mental health? Are you focusing on, you know, veterans? Like what would you say is your client persona? If you have one, it could be more generalistic.
Yeah. I would say that my, I guess, specialty would be working with trauma in general. I do still work with a lot of like childhood trauma as adults, but also I've branched out a little bit more. We have several like prisons in our area, so I'll do a lot of work with like COs and people who are employed at those locations. And we don't have a ton of military in our area, but I do end up working with them and have really good success rates. So
that's amazing. And how much of your clients do you feel come to Anchoring Hope for you versus one of your employees? And how do you ensure that the quality remains consistent? Are the therapists under you part of like some type of training or similar program where they know what the end result is? They're not going to kind of go off the deep end on some tangents where it doesn't really fit your branding or your persona. I'm curious how you set those values within your company.
I think that people's education do a great job of preparing them to be counselors just because, you know, there's a lot of ethics and courses that we have to take. So that does a lot of the legwork for me because people are coming to my office with their licenses and a master's degree. So a lot of times they already have a pretty high standard of, you know, their own ethicality. But I guess building that within our company culture is something that we do pretty often is have, well, like we have two offices and one office, we have a regular meeting every other week and we just touch base, talk about like sessions or how we're ideas or ways we can help each other. Just anything that comes up, just really good communication, I guess, whenever something does come up and we'll just communicate it across to everybody. And then at our other office, it's an hour away for me. So I try to get over there as often as I can and do the same meeting structure.
I think that's key to really any service-based business that you have like some type of team outings. Because for me, the mistake I've made is strictly just speaking about business. And then I only speak to an employee if there's an issue that arises. And it's like if they see Steve is calling, like, oh, great, like, what's the issue now type of situation, where I never want to be that type of guy. So it's important just to have like a really good culture within your business where it's like, hey, let's just catch up. How's it going? What's going on in your life? How are your clients?
Yeah.
You know, just keeping that consistent is so important. And I think that can get lost if people get caught in that hamster wheel of just busy business.
Yeah.
So to
well,
speak.
I am.
So it's great to hear you.
Like,
do that.
If I'm talking to somebody about anything, really, I'm very hyper aware of how I communicate to them because, like, a lot of our employees come from like more toxic-ish work environments. And so they're used to somebody only contacting them if there's a problem. And so I try to, I've been trying to send out like weekly encouragement. So if we get surveys back from clients, I'll be like, this is something your client said about you, you know, anonymously. Keep doing the great work. You're doing an amazing job. Or if something, there is a concern or something I need to talk to them about, I don't have big issues, but I'll tell them like, hey, can we talk tomorrow about, and I'll tell them the topic. I won't just like say, hey, we need to talk tomorrow.
Yeah, people like pending doom, like, what is this
you're
talking about?
Me, you know, it's like,
yeah, exactly.
Try to be like, let them know when I can, what's going to be going down.
You touched upon this a little bit where you can't really reveal, you have a Hippocratic Oath. And I know that came up on the blocks where like, well, how do you put testimonials on your website? You can't say who they are and what they're about. I think it's just age and gender, right?
Yeah, and that's what was the feedback somebody else said, age and gender, but I just kind of go the extra mile. I just put the words and I put on, if you saw on our website, I just put like a generic stock photo of a person's face and then I put a little star at the bottom, like not the real person to protect their identity.
Yeah.
It's just my workaround.
No, that's a great way to do it. I'm really deeply curious about your future plans here because now you have 7 therapists, right? So it's not just you running the shop anymore. You have a legitimate company that you're running. Are you still taking on like your own clients or now are you at a point where you're kind of managing the shop, so to speak?
Yeah, this is the whole working in your business versus on your business.
And I'm sure you really like meeting with clients, but that's probably the kicker.
I love it, but I can tell when I'm seeing too many people. And it's like, I'm there currently, but the reason I'm there currently is we get to end up with a wait list at times, and I don't like people to wait. So I'm like, go ahead, get them in with me. We're going to get that going. So I was trying to wait on a few moving parts to get settled and just like bridge us over till one of our clinicians could start accepting clients with insurance. And like, we just got there yesterday. So we'll be able to get that wait list down and get a lot of people in with her.
So is your expansion going to be bringing on more licensed therapists? Do you want to open more offices? And obviously that requires capital. Think of it in broader sense term, like if someone's in the same position as you, what What do you think is the most effective tool to scale organically so it's not, you don't feel like you're drowning and getting it back, kind of caught back in your business? Or do you kind of want to keep it like, hey, I'm in a really comfortable spot. Let's kind of keep status quo.
No. Well, like I went to the blocks, I was like, status quo, I'm just making it through. I had a goal to like just make it through August because I had some debt that I wanted to focus on. But I'm like, we opened our second office last year and it was profitable, you know, in that first year. Why am I waiting?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just so silly to me now.
Sometimes you got to get out of your own way,
yeah,
as they say.
Yeah. So. And I think it's just for my brain enough to catch up. Like, I want to have the processes, like the perfectionist in me, right, wants to have everything lined up. I want it to go smoothly. I want to avoid any problems. There's nothing wrong with that to a degree, but I feel like it's been so much that it's hindering me and preventing me from taking the next step. So my goal was 7 offices in 10 years.
Cool. Why 7 as opposed to 10 or 8? Is it just it's a 7 is lucky number?
I wanted
number?
To have a little time in between so I didn't have to pressure myself as hard. But I don't know. I don't know. The blocks kind of lit that fire under me. So we might be expanding sooner. Who knows? But my thought is, like, I want to focus in areas that don't have many services available, and that's pretty prominent in Southwest Virginia. So
I can imagine, yeah. So do you think you would take out loans to do these expansions? Is this capital you're just going to reinvest from your current income from the business?
That one. It's just, you know, my very first office, I started out renting. It was $100 a month to rent this one office. And now I own that building.
There you go. Who's better than you? That's amazing.
Yep.
Yeah. And I always say this to business owners, like, so I'm a real estate guy. I always advocate, like, pay attention to the lease you're signing, because chances are you're going to come up with 2 months security deposit, which could be, if your space is $2,000 a month, that's $4,000. And then you committed to a 5-year lease and then you got to pay all utility costs anyway. You can do an SBA loan as long as you occupy 51% of that commercial space at a really, 7-8% interest rate. Granted, you got to come up with maybe more money, but it's only typically 10%. It's not that much more. And now you own the building and can rent out another space to someone else. Longevity. It's like the best way to access capital without going crazy. So I'm so happy to hear you own your own office building now. That's amazing.
Well, I own that one. The one in our other second location, Abingdon, I rent that one, did a 3-year lease, but I'm planning to see like how it's going over there, how it's growing. And then once that 3 years is up, I'll start looking to buy in that area. I'm so excited about that. A big part of our brand is the atmosphere. And our building in Wise is this older building, like this beautiful tin like roof. It's, I don't know, I'm terrible at guesstimating.
1700s, 1800s, something crazy.
It's old, but I'm thinking like 15 feet ceilings kind of thing. Like,
oh, okay.
It's very nice and airy and spacey, but I can't do that in our rental. And I just want something that matches more our brand.
Perfect. So speaking of branding and marketing, what are your plans now? Because if you're going to start opening up multiple offices, you have to now invest deeply into marketing, and you might be opening up in townships that you don't have a presence. People don't know about Anchoring Hope. What is your future marketing plans now? Are you going to be doing Facebook ads? Are you going to be doing a lot of social media? What would you say is your avenue?
Okay, so we're more in a demand harvesting situation.
Yes, please explain what that is to listeners.
You're pulling out all my blocks knowledge. So we got demand creation and demand harvesting. And okay, this is the way that I kind of understood it. So correct me if I'm or add anything to it. Part of it's going to be like demand creation is you want to target more like social media, that kind of stuff. And it's for a product that people really don't know that they need yet. Whereas people that are wanting counseling, they don't go to Facebook. They don't go to Instagram. They go to Google and they type in counselors near me. So Google is going to be more of that demand harvesting. The demand's already there. We just have to harvest that demand. We don't have to create it. So my avenue is going to be more like Google ads, that kind of route.
And we do a lot of just connecting with referral sources in the areas. So for us, it's like a lot of referrals come from doctor's offices. So we're just sending one-page faxes to those offices to be like, hey, we're here.
Yeah, that's excellent. And what falls in line with demand harvesting, the Google ads, obviously keywords is really, really key in making sure you're not just kind of, you're monitoring what your ad expenditure is. So I came from the demand harvest world in real estate. And now, because I'm a sales coach, it's more of the demand creation, which I've noticed that I suck at compared to demand harvesting. It's just a different way to market. So now I'm just hiring people who are much smarter than me to help me with the demand creation side. But with demand harvesting, so something I noticed that you're really good at is it looks like you revamped a lot of your copywriting. So copywriting, for people who don't know, it's basically just the text that are on your websites and landing pages, with whose mission is to lead to a client to book an appointment. But also being valuable, having good content on there is also key. So I'm going to read what you have on here. And I think this is an amazing hook. It says, find peace in the chaos of life without the uncertainty. Get started here. And as you scroll down, it's a lovely video of your office and you, kind of showing like what the client experience would be. And great job on that, by the way. I think that's keen for any service-based business owner to have a strong hook. And I always advocate to get on video, especially if you're a high-touch service where you're actually going to be interacting face-to-face. People want to get to know you. And I can't think of any other industry where they want to get to know the therapist potentially before they walk in the room. So was this intentional, this growth, or is this something that like you learned as you went on? Because I know when you first started with the $100 a month office that you probably didn't have such a cool website.
No. Everything that I've done recently was based on the template that we went over at the blocks. So the video that I put on there, that was based on one of our pod assignments. I think it was the first one I won.
That was probably day three maybe.
Yep. And yep. I just took that.
Yeah, I think we had Brian together. Yes. And I you went first, if I remember too. So you had the great opportunity to meet him, the quote unquote mean judge, as he himself coins, right? That's what the first time I actually got to know you there, because you had the copywriting down, or at least the idea of what you're going to implement very, very well. So that was cool. And then I think I won day two when it came to Google SEO and advertising. It's interesting to see different skill sets. But I digress. So now that you have these two offices, you have 7 employees, what is your typical day-to-day operations look like for you? So you're taking on some clients, but what are you doing in the meantime to grow this brand and vision?
Well, in the mornings, I participate in a guest podcast show. No.
Every morning.
No.
Yeah.
That's just today. I guess to grow and brand, I try to do what I can, but also outsource. I have an amazing receptionist and office manager that help me. So I try to divvy out where I can. So like I have one person looking at all the fax numbers for doctor's offices and sending out that fax. She's managing that. I really like developing the website and doing videos and that kind of thing. And then also I am like using Facebook marketing and stuff like that. So I actually posted my video on social media on Friday, and that same day we got a phone call for a new client. It's like, yeah, I saw your video on Facebook. I'm like, it's already worth the investment.
Really?
Yeah. Like, the time I put into it, it's worth it.
So she's kind of pivoting a little bit to finance. You mentioned that you're going to be kind of growing organically. You're not taking out big loans. You're going to be opening up offices. What advice would you give to other business owners who are in a similar field? Maybe that's a therapist, maybe it's a dentist, maybe it's anyone who's seen clients. It could be a DJ, photographer. What kind of cash flow would you recommend that you see coming in before you feel comfortable? And more importantly, and I think a lot of people struggle with this, how much should you pay yourself as an owner? Because obviously, whatever the profit is doesn't go directly to your pocket. Like, you have to be kind of smart about it. What have you found to be the recipe for success there?
Oh gosh, that was several questions in one. Can we narrow it down?
Yeah, so let's focus on payment of owner. I'll start with the last question there. Percentage-wise, let's say you're running a 30 35% profit margin on your business, and let's use super easy numbers, your business is pulling in $100,000 a year. I know we're hopefully much more than that because you have a high payroll. But on that front, like, how much of that do you pay yourself compared to what you're reinvesting in the business? And think of it as a broader term of how other business owners can take away from this.
Shoot, I don't know if I'm a good person to listen to on that one, but isn't there a whole book called, isn't it Profit First?
Very good. There is. Yes.
I haven't read it.
Yeah.
Maybe you're a good one to answer the question.
I forget the name of the offer now, but Profit First basically means that before you put money into marketing, taxes, insurance, payroll, as a business owner, you should be paying yourself. And for me, I always struggle, like, good, I'll pay myself. What am I going to pay myself? It's like, what is the actual wages I should be taking here that makes sense, where I'm not, you know, digging too deep into the gold mine, and also leaving plenty to reinvest into the company. And I think it could be a nuanced answer, right? It could be, you know, if we made, you know, a $30,000 profit, maybe my end is 10 and 20,000 gets reinvested in the business and everything else from there. So again, there's a lot of ways you can kind of go about it. And so the secondary question here is, if you're expanding, you want to open up a brick and mortar store, you want to make sure you have enough cash flow. Are you creating budgets to make sure, or at least hiring someone that can do it for you, where it makes sense? Like, hey, I want to make sure I'm going to afford this while this builds up and ramps up. I'm hitting you with some hard finance questions here. I'm putting you on the spot.
You are. And I have an accounting degree, and I'm going to reveal.
That's why I brought it up. I'm like, accounting degree. There you go.
Yeah. I'm not that. I don't analyze it that much. I've just kind of done it.
It might be a beneficial, because I know a lot of people will overanalyze, analyst paralysis,
and that's
right?
Why I don't.
If you think too hard and analyze it, you're looking just at facts and figures, chances are you might not make the leap to actually make a decision and stay stagnant for a lot of the time.
Right. And if we go back to like the profit first thing, so I know that's what, like, pay yourself first, but I've never done that. I'm sorry.
No, I don't either. So I know I should.
I should. And I, like, have all these numbers. Yeah. Like, what I do is I like to have an emergency fund. I like to have just a pot of money sitting there. I want to try and have, like, my goal is to, like, have enough that would cover payroll for 2 months if something happened. So that's important for me to have, like, an emergency backup fund. That and my personal goals, and this, I know it's not always recommended, but I hate debt. So my biggest focus, especially this year, is paying off my building. And that's just me personally. And I don't want to purchase another property until I do. I'm trying to realign my relationship of debt, but I'm not there yet.
You know what it is too, is that I think you hear two camps. You have people who are fans, say Dave Ramsey, who's like, no debt, pay cash for everything. And then you hear people like Robert Kiyosaki, who's like, you should be in debt up to your eyeballs. There's definitely a middle ground.
They're giving you money, right? Take it. I've been reading Robert Kiyosaki lately, and I'm like, I'm trying to get in that mindset.
I will say that there's no price to the peace of mind that comes with living debt free. So that's huge, regardless of, like, your missed opportunity, so to speak. Without debt can be really freeing to a lot of people. It's not for everyone to have, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in loans, even though those could be potentially making you money. So if we can quickly do a 180 here, I know that you're married, you're a mom of two, or you're a one right now, two. Amazing. Same here. How do you manage your, like, work life? Like, how do you switch off, so to speak, when you go home? Because as an entrepreneur, I can get caught in that, like, business mode constantly, and I have to, like, almost take a shower to relax when I get home.
Well, you know, my youngest is 3, my oldest is 17, so my youngest is
nice, right?
Yeah. 17 is he's pretty self sufficient. My 3-year-old is not. So
neither is mine. Right. No worry.
So I have to pick him up from daycare at 4. Every day. And then my husband teaches, and then he coaches after school. A lot of times there's, like, swim meets or tennis matches and stuff. So he's not home till late. My 3-year-old essentially will not allow me to work while he's there. So he is my on off switch.
Oh, there you go. Forcefully.
That's the on off switch. And like last night, my husband will, if he's off or whatever, he'll watch him for a while so I can catch up on stuff.
No kidding. Okay, that's a good strategy. I like that there's a little bit of dynamic there with the spouse kind of stepping in. And you got to have that in life. Otherwise, it's going to be a rough journey ahead. or just all business focused. I don't know how people do it, honestly, if that's their
motive. Yeah, and I could not do it without him. I would never have started my own company if it wasn't for him. So just having that support.
Makes sense. So now I'll ask you two philosophical questions. I know you have a 17-year-old and you have a 3-year-old. What do you want them to be most proud of their mama when they reach into adulthood? I know the 17-year-old's basically an adult, but what would you hope and aspire for that to be? Do you want to be known as like the kick-ass businesswoman? Do you want to be known as like the ever-present mom? Like what are you, I'm going deep here. I'm curious to know what your thoughts are.
To be known as work hard, play hard.
There you go. Yeah, not too bad. It's simple.
Should I
answer.
Go deeper level there?
Go deeper. Yeah. You got the therapy in you.
Got it. So me growing up, my mom was very like a hard worker. I definitely get my work ethic from her. But in the mornings, I'd wake up. She wasn't there. She was already at work. In the evenings, other people would pick us up because she worked late. And while I greatly appreciate that from her, it's made me really want to be there in the mornings to help them get ready, get them off to school, and be the one to pick them up in the evenings too. So being able to work between their schedule is important to me. So work hard and play hard.
And would you offer that advice to other entrepreneurs as well? Where it's like, or is it, would you say it's more custom tailored to the person's personality?
I would say you do you, boo-boo.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. So, and this is a question I ask every person who's on the show. If you could rewind the clock to a younger Stephanie who's maybe still in college, what advice would you espouse to that person now based on the journey that you've been on the past couple of years?
I would say simply just embrace yourself, be more confident.
Embrace yourself, be more confident. That's a great message to send out to the wider world. And I think a lot of people can struggle sometimes where, I can speak to myself, where like I was quirky and weird. I was into like Dungeons and Dragons and sci-fi novels, all that stuff. I didn't really fit in, so to speak. And I think people will shy away, especially if the peers that they see or that they're currently around are different and they don't really fit into what you're into. You know, and that's something I aspire, like, that's why I love the blocks, was that I was around a bunch of business owners. I'm like, I never get this opportunity. This
and
is
we're
amazing.
All a little weird, you know, it's in the
for
best
sure.
way, meaning of the word. I say that with a positive connotation. I thought the
Absolutely.
Other piece of advice that I would really wish I'd told myself in the business sense of like, don't be afraid to fail. If you mess up, something goes wrong, that does not mean you are a failure. It just means it's an opportunity to learn and grow. And what is it like Thomas Edison? He tried a million. He learned like a bunch of ways to not make a light bulb.
That's
and
right.
He kept trying. And then
yeah,
he
exactly.
finally found one way that did work. So just.
Yeah, and he kept that. And then he stole Nikola Tesla's ideas. But yeah, that's a different story. But he did get the light bulbs. So that we'll give him that as we have lights around us now. Last but not least question, I would love your perspective as a therapist on this, less as an entrepreneur. What advice would you offer as a therapist to other business owners if people feel like an imposter syndrome of like, why am I qualified to deliver this service, whether that's a photographer, a roofer, another therapist, whatever business they're in, and they feel maybe that they're like, who am I to sell this course? Who am I to do this? What would you say is a good practice of self-care? So
okay, I think it's like a mindset shift here. And I know we talk about like comparison is the thief of joy and that kind of thing. I think when we compare ourselves to other people, we do it in a negative way. So we compare us like, oh, but I'm not that. Oh, but I'm not that. Oh, but I'm not that. All we have to do is switch that. All we have to realize is when we're comparing us to someone, we have to be like, this is what I have that they don't have. And right there in that mindset shift, that's the gap that you're filling. That's what you're offering to people. That's your brand. That's what's important about you. And that's what you can offer the world is what you are, not what you aren't. So just trying to be yourself.
I love that. And is there any... If let's say I'm going through some tough times, whether like pretend I'm one of your clients, and I'm struggling with, you know, balancing business and family obligations, and I feel overwhelmed and stressed. As a general piece of advice that you can give to a greater audience, obviously everyone has their, like, please call up Stephanie if you have some real issues, because she'll definitely guide you on the right path. But is there any practices that you espouse that can help someone who's really feeling maybe overwhelmed with too much noise out there in a way? Because I've experienced that myself. So this is a free therapy session now.
Yeah, we've switched over.
Okay. Get into it, yeah.
I think it's really tough, especially as entrepreneurs, because we are pulled in so many different directions and we see that like endless to-do list. I think it's recognizing there will always be something to do. There will always be the noise. It's regardless, we might go super hard one day and we might get a lot done, but there's always going to be something else to do, whether it's in our family, our business, ourself, is whatever. I think the key is what I'm finding is like the concept of mindfulness. And that's just simply being present with whatever is right there in front of you. So we can get overwhelmed by everything. And that's going to be easy to do because our brain is wired to be like right here, right now, and to focus on this one thing. But if we're looking at everything we need to do, we're going to get overwhelmed. So just taking a breath and stepping back and just being right there 100% with whatever it is. And I can do that pretty well in my sessions. Like I am right there with my person in that moment, listening to them right where they are. And I'm able to block out all that other noise. Like, yeah, I need to do this after. Yeah, I need to go here after. It's just being right there with what's most important. So I think a lot of times we say, oh, I don't have time for self-care or whatever. But if we did do the self-care, we're like going to be thinking about everything else we should be doing instead. That's why mindfulness is so important. It literally gives you that that moment to breathe and be with what you're doing in that moment.
And how do you practice mindfulness? Is it through meditation? Is it through like other? Is there any other like tactics that someone can use to? I know it's a journey, right? It's not going to be like flip on a switch and I'm mindful.
Yes. So I would consider it's like a muscle, and it's a very weak muscle, especially for those of us who are used to living like 10 steps ahead in the future. I would start, and I'm considering this project of creating my own app. I'm not there yet. So for now, I would start with like 5-minute mindfulness meditations on YouTube. And all you do, Google 5-minute mindfulness meditation, like being in the present moment, anything, and it'll guide you. 5 minutes is going to feel like an eternity.
Even though it seems like it goes by quick, but I, my brain is like firing on all cylinders all the time and I can't calm it down. I haven't really tried either. So I think, again, that's a muscle.
I would do that. And the one thing I always tell people is like, if your brain jumps to other things, just know that's fine. It's going to happen. It's what your brain's used to doing. What we want to do is to be able to catch yourself sooner. So when your mind jumps to something else, be like, oh, there it is. Let me refocus, bring it back. That's where the skill comes in. That's where the muscle gets built, is being able to catch yourself sooner and refocus in on what's happening in that moment.
Amazing. Thank you for that. That's the great advice for me. That just saved me a few $100. And hopefully the listeners can take some value away from there. Now, out of curiosity, can you help anyone outside of Virginia, like as a licensed therapist? Are you only, as of now, segmented to the state of Virginia? If anyone wants to, you know, to reach out to you if they feel like they need some extra support.
There are interesting things happening. Change is afoot.
Cool.
Currently, we are limited to our state that we have a license in, which mine would be Virginia. There's this thing called the Counseling Compact, which a lot of different states are signing into law and are enacting to allow us to practice across multiple states. So it would be state dependent. And also, those applications haven't come out yet. They're expected to come out, like, I think Q3 or 4 this year. So I would hope by next year that it'll be much more expanded than it is currently.
Very cool. But if you are in the state of Virginia and you feel like you're struggling getting through something, where can someone find out more about you?
Our amazing new revamped website, of course. Yeah, it's just www.ahchope.com. And fun fact, my middle name is Hope.
There you go. What a cliche, but it's also something that makes a lot of sense. What about for social media purposes?
Social media, so Facebook's going to be AHC Hope. Just you can do at AHC Hope and it'll find our business page. And you'll see a lovely teal and dark blue little profile picture. And on Instagram, somebody had taken AHC Hope already.
Oh, no. So, AHC underscore Hope.
Yeah, I should have. I didn't think of that one. I went with AHC Hope 20 because I formed in 2020.
Fair enough to find. Stephanie, thank you so much for your time. I really liked the free therapy session there. Thank you for
that.
Happy
to do it. It's my passion.
Yeah, and I know that you're on the path of success. So I'm excited to follow along on your journey. And I think there was a lot of value here when it comes to just running a business and kind of getting it, bootstrapping it as you did. So the lesson here is that don't feel, this is a deep lesson, don't feel like you have to spend thousands of dollars when you start and getting a fancy office when you don't even have a client walk in the door yet. So don't be ashamed to go in the back of a real estate office or a Chinese restaurant and have your office like Saul Goodman style here. But fun stuff. Again, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate your time. And I hopefully will see you guys soon.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Thank you for tuning into Service Business Success with Class. Are you craving more strategies to supercharge your business growth? You can connect with me at successwithclass.com or on my Instagram at StevieClass. And remember, when you hit subscribe, it's a win-win. You'll get your hands on all the latest tips, and you'll be supporting the show too. Thanks again for joining. Until next time.